I actually don't care that much about having the cum on my feet. If that's, I mean, it's putting the feet back in my bed where I'm sleeping.
Oh.
Which is also crazy because it's not like I've never had a stranger's cum on me. AmyMillerComedy.com.
That is Amy Miller. I already started.
Oh,
see,
right,
that was
yeah.
I thought.
I'm already finished.
Oh, here it is. Yeah. All right, guys. Thank you, guys. Thank you for coming to the Standby Podcast with Amy Miller.
Thanks for joining us, Francisco.
Man. Well, thanks, Amy. Amy Miller is our guest today at the Standby Podcast. Thank you. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thanks for asking me.
We really appreciate it.
We actually didn't ask her before we started filming, but very talented stand-up comic. Is there anything that you wanted us to mention at the top to push?
Oh, I don't know.
Plug your
stand. They don't even know if they like me yet.
Oh, they like you.
Oh, they,
I mean, I'm always touring, so if you like me at the end, then you can look at my website and come see me. Yeah.
Okay, cool,
or take a chance. Buy tickets now.
Oh, please. That would be nice.
Yeah.
And sit here and anger watch, anger listen to our
then
podcast.
I'm
going to
say a lot of slurs, and they're going to ask for refunds.
Nice. Well, I just want reading quickly. I mean, you're one of the Comedy Central's Up Next comics for 2018, right? So that was great.
A few years back. Before the apocalypse.
Do you still feel up next, though? Do you still feel up next?
Now I have a half hour coming out with them. So I guess it all worked out.
Yeah, so that was good. I mean, I made a good impression.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. March 24th, my first Comedy Central special.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Congrats. That's on Comedy Central.
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, it'll be, you can watch it on YouTube and stuff too.
Yeah. I mean, that's...
Now they're not just, like, showing it one time.
That's
ever
good.
On
right.
the channel. Cause
and then it goes to the
rest
archives.
Of the time, they have to show South Park 19 to 22 hours a day. So there's not a lot of time for stand-up anymore.
No.
They leave a little time for Trevor Noah, and then it's all South Park. And I think now Seinfeld and The Office.
All reruns.
You can just watch it on YouTube.
Yeah,
which is
and
nice.
I'm assuming they'll have clips too, right?
Totally.
Like little clips of, you know, TikTok and YouTube as well.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That's the way to do it now.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. Congrats.
Yeah, so I'm not up next anymore.
She's up. You're here.
She's actually up.
Yeah, I'm batting.
You're batting. Yes.
This is it. Here it comes, March 24th.
Batting fourth, cleanup hitter. Nice. And you were, you started in San Francisco, but are you originally from there?
I was born in San Francisco, and then I grew up in the East Bay. I did my first open mic in San Francisco at a laundromat.
Oh,
right.
And then, but I've lived most of my life in Oakland, and so I did most of my early shows there. And then I moved to Portland, and then New York, and then here.
Oh.
I was trying to remember when we met.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Was it on Last Comic?
Could be, yeah.
I think so.
Yeah,
we did the same season
that's
of Last
right.
Comic.
Yeah, which is the last season.
Yes, the final season.
The final season.
Yeah.
You guys ended it.
Yeah, we were like, after this.
No, they went out on top.
Two of the comedians who ended Last Comic Standing.
But I thought it was so fun. Did you have fun?
Yeah, it was cool. I mean, I was just so like, it was like so quick.
It was really fast.
Very fast.
It was just like a fun little vacation.
Yeah, it was cool to just be, I mean, that's my first time doing anything on live TV.
Filmed in LA, right?
Universal.
Yeah, Universal Studios, and we stayed there. It was just funny. I was so new at stand-up. I was like, I don't know, 2.5 years in or something.
Right.
So I just thought the whole thing was hilarious. But I guess some people had bad experiences, but I'm always like, I knew that we met there because I do, if it was a summer camp thing,
yes.
Where I kind of always remember like who was there with us. And
yeah.
I don't know, it was like a special memory
for
me.
I mean, I had fun
you did
too.
Great.
Yeah, I mean, I made it to the top 10. It was cool. I mean, I was just, and for me, it was more like, it was a good experience just to even learn how to perform on live TV, you know,
yeah.
Just with a camera and like. And then it was, I mean, the only thing it was like, I wish I would have more like time on TV, you know, for
they featured me pretty heavily. I got lucky, although I was like a villain, so that was weird. But it was like whatever.
No.
Well, that's the thing.
How did they spin it?
Well, they wanted me to be there because they would ask me because I was going against Ian Bagg when I got to the top 10.
Yes,
and they're like, so why are you, you know, talent? And I was like, no, Ian's my friend.
Yeah,
I'm like,
that
and I was
weird.
Like,
wait
and
a minute,
I was like,
both
not...
of you, they wanted to pitch as. As the villains,
well,
as heels.
Well, not I mean, they wanted to, like, say, kind of like how reality TV is.
Yeah,
like,
oh, they
100%
were nice.
No, like, I know several examples on that. America's Got Talent recently, and comedians who had kids. And I know that production, like, called them and went, we've already got the comedian with the kid.
Oh,
yeah. The kid. And even after they've had great sets, like, I had a great set, this is it. I told them about my kid, and then getting that call, like, well... We've got another one who takes more boxes with a kid, so we're going with them. So your set will just disappear into the ether.
Yeah, it was. They tried that with me and Norm because, you know, when Norm would say critical things and they would get me in the booth and be like, are you mad at Norm? And I'm like, no, like, of course not. Like, he's one of the greatest comedians of all time. And this whole experience is hilarious.
Yeah.
It wasn't like a villain as much as in like the trailers.
Mm-hmm.
The trailer that ran like for weeks before the premiere would be like, is this comedian too dark for our judges? Because I did like a police brutality joke and I talked about my dad's corpse. Mm. Like, so for NBC, it was
like
very
edgy.
Dark
yeah.
shit.
Yeah.
But it was just hilarious. Like, I don't know. I had such a good time.
Yeah, no.
Now, are you getting those weird royalty checks lately?
No.
Oh.
Francisco,
you
who's
got
the villain, man?
You got to check with SAG because there's, I just, a few weeks ago, started getting like a little, a tiny amount, like $75 or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I guess in Australia, there's like, in like hotel, some hotel chain, you can like rent old episodes of Last Comic, and enough people did that I got like a few dollars, which I'm like, what is wrong with you?
You're
traveling, and you're like, I'd really like to see some 8-year-old stand-up comedy right now.
Let me check that.
But thank you. Keep watching.
Yeah.
And they pay for it.
That's
so
good.
Weird. Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm going to I got all the SAG stuff, so, but I'm definitely going to check because I know I
get... Get on your royalties.
I mean, I don't even, you know, I get the royalties for stuff that I've done. So, like, but it's all combined.
Yeah.
So it's not, it's never a crazy amount.
Right.
I know.
Like, so
and it's
never,
been
like,
such a long pandemic, too. A lot of the royalties have dried up because my last bundle was probably about 50 checks, but they were all for 3 cents each.
Oh, good for you.
So, oh, yeah. That, it all
American
adds up.
Cents.
That's true, too. Buy a house in Canada.
Yeah. I know.
In certain parts.
And well, so you said you started, and then so your first big move. First of all, when did you start doing stand up? Like
2010.
Were you
September 2010?
Was you still like in? Is that thing that you always wanted to do? Were you like in high school? Like always?
Oh no, that's very sweet, Francisco. No, I'm 41. So
what?
Yeah.
Oh wow, you look so young.
Thank you. Tell the industry.
She's 21.
What was the decision that made you go out?
Yeah. So I was like kind of a full like adult, sort of, as much as you're an adult at 30 or whatever. But I was just working like in tech in San Francisco, and I don't know. I just had a really bad year, and then I wanted to do something crazy. And like get over my stage fright. I had really crippling stage fright. Even in like a work context, it was affecting me, you know, like I didn't want to like lead meetings or whatever. So I was like, I'm just tired of this. And I want to like do the hardest thing I can imagine.
Yeah.
Wow.
Which stand up is.
And I didn't think I would stick with it, but I did.
Wow.
So here we are. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Almost 12 years later.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
That's great.
And that all happened in the Bay Area. And then when I moved to LA 5 years ago, I quit. That was the last time I've had a day job.
That you had a day job.
Yeah.
That's great.
Wait,
so, that's
what are your biggest memories of this laundry gig? That's what I want to know. What do you
it's pretty legendary place. So it's a place called The Brainwash. It is a laundromat / restaurant / bar.
Wow.
On Folsom Street in San Francisco. And this guy, Tony Sparks, they call him the godfather of San Francisco comedy. He ran this open mic every, I think, Monday, Thursday maybe, for like 15 years almost.
Okay.
And he would also do something where he would give preferential sign up to women. Because he just saw after that many years, like, women would, like, I started with a ton of women, but then you're 5 years in and you're like, where'd they all go, you know? Because it sucks. Yeah. And so, and especially during open mic time.
When you say it
time,
sucks, do you, yeah, is that it? You mean to do all the tryout spots and the open mic
Well,
spots
many are- aspects of it, but I think especially during that open mic time when you're a year, 2 years in and it's almost all men and you're one of the few women, like, I don't know, people say creepy shit, mm-hmm. people treat you differently.
Yeah, it's just weird being, it's always weird being the only one of you
yeah.
in
yeah.
any situation.
Yeah.
You know, you just be like, you know, because it does feel weird, you know?
Right. So he would let us sign up first, and that really helped, I think, keep us coming back. Like, it was so smart. I think a lot of open mics should do that.
Yeah.
yeah, right on.
And, yeah, so a lot of people were just doing their laundry, and they did not want to hear stand-up. Yeah. And so you would see people on their laptops, like, with headphones on.
Yes.
Like, right next to the stage.
This
like,
is what I was very curious about. Like, I was wondering if you were going to say if they stopped laundry or no. But they,
oh,
it's
no.
still, it still functions.
Some of the comedians would bring their laundry.
Are you serious? Yeah. You can do your laundry while doing your stand-up.
So they would give each other, they lie, they're like, like, that's my 5 minutes. Sorry,
I love
yeah.
it.
It was one of those places that really could only thrive in, like, a pre-gentrified San Francisco, you know? Because, wow. yeah, it was also a cafe, so there's just people eating burgers, and, like, it was a long list. It'd be, like, 50 comedians or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And it was really fun, and
this
that's where I made, like...
This is a
like,
lot of stuff. This yeah. is, like, a schizophrenic...
Yeah.
Venue, this. It's laundry and it's sandwiches
it's
and
very,
it's stand-up.
It's actually a very...
Totally.
It's a very Latino type business.
Absolutely.
Where you're doing... Because yeah. Latinos always have like this store where they sell everything. Like, it's
right.
like you go in there and like, hey, food. And then we also sell a baby doll, you know?
yeah.
Like,
and
tools.
It's church on Sunday.
And, yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
yeah.
You get baptized and married at the same time. It's like, what's
and
going on?
And then you're
on?
Like, do you know anyone who could fix my car?
Yeah, I can
yeah.
do it. Yeah.
yeah, yeah.
You can notarize documents, you know, passport
exactly.
pictures.
You can do it all at the laundry.
yeah, that's a lot of the, like, life's blood of San Francisco that's missing now. It's really sad, but... But yeah, it was wild. I never thought I was going to go a second time, but then I just made all these friends. Like, you know, I met David Bory and Claire O'Kane and like all these people. So a lot of Bay Area comics came out of there and they would
great.
Come back. You know, sometimes like if Moshe was in town or Marcella, like they would come do a set at the open mic just
cool.
to visit Tony and
nice.
Go back to their roots. So it was always really, really fun and crazy.
Right
I mean,
on.
Also, like, you know, unhoused people would sign up. It would be wild.
Yeah.
People taking their clothes off or whatever.
Oh,
like,
wait, what? When?
I saw that a bit
at
here
the
as
open
well.
Mic.
At
I
the
mean,
same
you know,
one?
It's in downtown San Francisco,
okay.
so, like, and anyone could sign up. So just, like, crazy shit would
happen.
Oh,
of course.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I witnessed that one night at the Laugh Factory because I had never seen, like, I was doing Dom Herrera's podcast. But before Don Moreau's podcast was that bucket thing. And
yeah.
there was easily a couple of unsheltered, is that what you said? Unsheltered,
unhoused, yeah.
Unhoused,
yeah.
unhoused, or homeless people who clearly got their spot and didn't have any jokes.
Right.
But
which I'm like, God bless.
Used their
you know?
3 minutes to just yell about the government.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
and,
absolutely.
And whatever else. And
same
it was one of my first tastes of LA. I was like, oh, so this is.
oh, good for you.
This is. So we're not necessarily nurturing new comedians
yeah.
here. We're
well,
just
it was half and half.
All,
like,
the whole
makes
mix
it easier to stand out, you know,
yeah.
if you're like one of the few comics that really. So I just got this crew of friends that we came back every week. And it was weird because I was like. Kind of an adult
yeah.
with like a real job and an apartment in San Francisco
mm-hmm.
and you know my friends were like 20
yeah.
I mean David Bory was 20 like Claire O'Kane was I think 18 or 17 when
wow.
we started so it was really fun
that's great it's actually wow. I kind of connect to that because that's kind of like when I moved to you know I also started doing comedy after I graduate and I worked for like 2 years and then I moved here and I was still working while I started doing open mic so
yeah
so I always felt like I was always like the older you know kind of like with younger comics and stuff like that and so it's kind of like the same thing as
yeah.
you kind of going through that which is it was interesting because I guess I don't know with you I mean like when you're older I guess you start you're like well I want to do this but I also I want to live good You know, yeah, like, yeah. I don't want to, I heard, yeah. heard guys like, oh, I live in my car. I was like, yeah, I'm not doing that.
Yeah, on sorry. The road, I wasn't really crashing with people or whatever. So, right. Yeah, you spend more money on travel and hotels because you're kind of used to a
yeah.
lifestyle.
Yeah, standards.
yeah.
You're like, exactly. I have it sleeping in a bed.
Yeah. I'll do your gig for $100. But most all of it's gonna go towards the hotel
right.
now. So
yeah, I would go on work trips and just and like do festivals and like work remotely. So that was kind of a lot. What I did early was just right. apply to like every festival because
cool.
I was lucky enough to have an income, you know.
Yeah,
and that helped a lot. But yeah, pluses and minuses all around. I think it's easier to develop faster when you're not 19 or 20 because you have like,
yeah.
more
material
of a
to talk about. Yeah,
yeah.
That's actually what I was going to ask
you. Went through it.
I was going to say, like, do you find that the learning curve is exponential? Basically, once you have more life experience and you start doing stand up, you're going to gain more in that first year than people when they're 19 and they start doing stand up and it's still about.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think, you know, we've all heard like, oh, no one's funny before 10 years, or you have to put in your 10,000 hours. I mean, that's a myth that came from like men who started at 17, you know,
yeah, which yeah.
and certain people stood out for sure. You know, we've all heard like Chappelle came out of the gate hilarious
yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
people like Hannibal who started as teenagers. But for the most part, like
you need life
you all just suck
yeah.
for 10 years
yeah.
and then all of a sudden figure it out because you have some attention. But and not to say I was, like, hilarious right away. Nobody is. But I had some jokes, and I got some laughs, and I was like, okay, if I'm going to commit time to this and be out every night while doing this day job, like,
yeah.
I want to do it well, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
So.
That sounds exhausting.
So and then you
the problem is that now I'm, you know, 11 years or almost 12 in, and I'm just getting that attention, but now I'm 41, and they do not like that in the industry.
You don't
I guess
that,
I shouldn't say
have,
it out
doesn't
loud.
Doesn't that have good
okay.
merit?
I mean, it,
oh,
I mean,
no,
I
not
would...
for women, but that's very sweet.
Really? Isn't that what they say in the acting industry? But I've never heard
what
that said
it?
About stand-ups.
No.
That, you know, that actresses have a lot harder time being hired
yeah.
when they're 40. There's that spot when you're 40 where you're not yet playing moms. And you're no longer the
sure.
hot.
Right,
you know,
and that I don't care about for auditions. I'm like, I would love to
yeah.
be a mom. But,
yeah.
you know, for stand-up, it's the same. It's the same
really?
Double standard. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's feedback
and
I hear all the time.
Is it for a specific, like, type of shows or, like... Or for like,
I mean, it's kind of all over the place. It's some of it's internal, you know. Some of it is like prominent men in stand up are more likely to help the young ingenue or whatever who's hot or whatever. Not that
right.
they're not hot, because you know
yeah.
we're all in the
yeah,
same
yeah,
room,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Now. But you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But and then some of it is industry of just like, oh, if we're catering to men 18 to 25. Then you won't have material they can relate to. Of course, it doesn't matter that Bill Burr is 55.
Of course.
You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah.
yeah.
Or whoever.
Yeah, they can relate to him, but you can't relate to somebody else. It's like, yeah.
yeah.
like it's.
Well, that's what I was thinking, because Lori Kilmartin came to mind. Like, she's probably one of the hottest. Isn't she one of the hottest tickets on the circuit? But I'm
not if you ask Lori.
Yeah.
Oh, really? All right.
If you read her. If you follow her on Twitter. Yeah.
Or listen to her podcast with Jackie.
Yeah, yeah.
I wasn't aware of this.
I mean, she's had great success. She also started very young, so a lot of that stuff she did, you know, in her early 20s. She hit all these stand-up milestones.
Right.
And now it is harder for her to get certain jobs or certain spots, you know,
right.
definitely.
Wow.
But, you know, I mean, I think she's a huge success. But
yeah,
yeah
me too.
I mean, to be
yeah.
doing all that she started so young and then working with Conan and doing all this stuff, I mean, that's yeah. a huge success.
Because,
you know?
I mean, so to be fair, so my...
But no one's going to be like, hey, Lord, like... You know, like Bird or someone like that isn't going to be like, hey, Lori, come on the road with me and open. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
It's like,
oh,
although,
no.
yeah.
But, yeah.
well, I
but
think
I
it's also
because
she's like a little
break.
Like, I mean, I...
She's established in her own right.
Yeah. So,
but,
I mean,
okay,
it would be more of like a, something like a tour like Bill Burr in France, for
yeah.
example. Some, it's got to be something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. It happens with club bookers, too, though, across the country, where it's like their calendars will be mostly men. And then, you know... hot blonde comedians.
Right.
And so I think that's where someone like Lori gets fucked a little bit. Like, oh, you know, our crowd isn't going to want to listen to the, you know, the story of a 50-something-year-old
woman. I'm so tired of hearing those excuses, isn't it? Yeah. Because they give that excuse either way. Either they'll go, we don't feel you have the social media presence to bring in your crowd. And then when you get it, if you have the 10,000 followers or whatever they said the marker is, then you've got it. Then they have the nerve to go, we're not sure our audience would like you. Which is it? Which is it? You wanted to feel that I had enough power to bring you an audience.
Yeah.
Or you want to feel that I'm going to entertain the audience that you already have. It's just an excuse that they have ready either way.
Yeah,
just
it's
to
all
say
very
we don't wanna...
layered and complicated. But...
Yeah. When I, so I've been, because I've been a stand-up for 22 years now, and when I started, comics the reputation was comics weren't even going to get to be their best until they were in their 40s.
Right.
You know, there was a lot of
which
you,
makes
you
sense.
Look,
yeah.
Look at these older TV presenters and everything, and everybody used to go, just calm down. There used to be an attitude of like, just relax, kid, relax. It takes being in your 40s to be in a, to be an established comedian, and that quickly turned on its head in the late 2000s with YouTube. And then YouTube kind of opened the doors to, oh, we need to start finding these overnight sensations. Wasn't a, not a podcast, but whatever that's called, video blogging or whatever. And so it all turned on its head. But that's what I remember. So it makes me, it hurts my heart a little, my soul a little bit to hear. Yeah, they start looking down on us when we're in our 40s.
Well, yeah, and
I'm,
it's like when
shit,
I hit
man.
That, yeah, when I hit that 20-year mark, like I'll be 50. And so it'll be even more of the same of like, oh, you know, you're not for our audience. It's fine. I'm not going to stop. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I don't want to. I love doing it. I'm good. I'm
And you have your, you know, and that, the point is to cultivate your fan base, and then they'll come see you. And then, and that's the key of it, you know, because if you have, you know, 1,000 fans in every city or whatever, then, you know, you can always tour. You can always.
Totally.
And not even go to comedy clubs, which is great now. You can rent your own theater, a little theater, and then do, you know, whatever, which is great, you know.
Yeah, you can be empowered by your own following and stuff. And I was talking with another comic about this yesterday. We were talking about how at a certain point, some comics don't, they stop breaking new ground. And our conversation initially started going, why wouldn't you? Like, because we were talking to a couple comics who hadn't, one comic who hadn't been to Alabama. And I think he said, I don't care to go to Alabama, even though they offered me. And initially we started going, why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you always want to go break new ground? And then we started thinking, oh, wait, you get older. If you have, you can have kids, you can not have kids. But you also have people that love working with you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you fill up enough dates, if you have, let's say 20, say there's 20 clubs around the world even that love working with you and will give you those 20 weekends, then I start to understand, oh, right, who gives a shit about the people that don't want to work with you? Just
I've kind of always felt that way. And I mean, there are people that I look to. Like Kathleen Madigan is a great example where she can sell out theaters. She's just a great fucking stand-up. And I don't – I mean, I can't think of, like, TV shows or movies that Kathleen has
been
in.
No, she just
in.
Does.
She's not, like – you know, a huge on TikTok or anything. She's like, so it's as much as we all grumble about these like things and like, oh, you know, these clubs are headlining like TikTok stars and stuff. It's like you still have to sort of deliver in the moment.
Of course.
If you're not, and if you just keep getting better at stand up, like things will come.
Yes. Yeah. And I always see that too. Yeah. Even like, and same thing when you go to the clubs and like people will see you and then they like you and then they're going to come back. And they're going to, you know, give, you know, tell more people. And I think that's, and I feel that's the way that you get
the jokes.
But you do have to deliver. And I think that's the most important thing. That's your job as a comic, to be funny and to be good. So then people go like, and then when you come back, people are like, oh, wow, they're even better, you know.
Right.
And that's, and I think when you do that, if that's, you know, stuff will come, you know, the more. You know, the more gigs will come out, the more dates will come, you know. I mean, it's a slower process, obviously. It takes longer, you know. It's not as fast as getting into, like...
It's true. Yeah, you know. It is slower, but it's a lot more fun in some ways. And I just didn't know in the beginning, you know, I've always focused on stand-up and joke writing and writing. And, like, you know, I mean, the first few years when we were just getting drunk and telling jokes in San Francisco, like... We didn't know, like, what's the process to do late night. Like, nobody told us that shit. So now comics start kind of out of the gate. Like, I got to get this 5 minutes, and it's going to be sort of robotic and, you know, autobiographical, so I can get that late night set
content and throw the followers. Yeah, they're already doing all this stuff.
And then they
stuff.
Get thrown up to do an hour or to headline, and they don't have the time. So I've just always had that like stand up focus, and I think it's paid off. But you're right; it is just a slower process for the other things.
Same thing with me. I mean, I felt like I focus all my stand up and in getting better and performing better and writing better and all that stuff. And then all the other stuff I kind of learn later on. And then, yeah, it takes longer because, yeah, I didn't have the little other tools.
The business.
It was more like you said,
yeah,
more
we
like.
We didn't know even we went to festivals and stuff. And I know there was industry there, but I never thought about that. And, like, we were just having fun and telling jokes.
It's the having fun part, isn't it?
And now it's like, oh, yeah, so people are watching. You know, now at festivals I'll see – now I'm on the other end where I'll be, like, headlining or a featured comic, and then I'll see, like, the new comics on showcases just, yeah, doing the same five on every show 10 times in a row, and I'm like – or are you having fun? Like, what's going on here?
And that's the key.
And it works in a way, but it's not. Yeah, it's not my way.
I think it's that balance. I mean, it's that doing having fun, but also doing the stuff that you need to do, but also not being so.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to be robotic and be like,
you want to be memorable.
Yes, and likable.
These people are seeing a 100 comics in 2 days. Yeah.
And be a human being, somebody that you talk to that you're like. Not even before you go up, you're like, oh, you're not like a robot. You're like, talk, hey, what's up? What are you going to eat? You're not ever out. And then to me, those are the things, too, that makes, where you have more connections as well.
Mm-hmm.
That with industry that it wasn't prepared. And then it's like, oh, now, and that's.
And connecting with other comics. I mean, ultimately, so many of our opportunities end up coming from each other.
Exactly.
Building those memories early on. I mean, I'm still very close friends with comics. I did like my first and second festivals with, because we just like always have that experience.
Yeah.
So.
And then you said you moved to Portland.
Mm-hmm.
So that's your first like big move for stand up, I guess, to go to Portland.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, what happens in the Bay Area a lot is people come to LA very fast and it's hard. If you're 2-3 years in, and then you show up here, you're starting at square one.
Yeah.
And, signing up for open mics. And it's just a much longer process. So I thought, now this is becoming more common. At the time, I thought I invented it. I thought I'll move to a middle city, and I thought about Austin, Denver, Nashville, and Portland. I think those were.
Okay.
So I was like, wherever I get a job. Day job first, I'll go there.
Oh, so you're applying for the job and then whatever you get the job.
But it was for comedy.
For comedy, yes.
And so
smart.
Bridgetown was going on and the Helium had just opened. And so there were all these kind of, and I loved Portland every time I visited. So there were all these things that I'm like, okay, I can start my own show. And I just want to do stand up as much as possible.
Right.
And you can't do that when you first move to LA and nobody knows who you are.
And do long sets in front of people. Yeah.
Exactly. So I think ultimately it was a good. I mean, that's how I got Last Comic. Like I auditioned up there, and most of the people in the industry that got to know me, it was because I was in Portland.
That's
if I had
been
in LA, it would have been the same. Yeah.
And you developed faster too, because you were
And I ran so many shows, and so then I would meet people that came to visit there, and they would do my shows, and then I would go to their cities and.
Build the connection.
I ran a midnight show for a long time, and so the headliners at Helium would like come do that after their Saturday night show. And,
oh, that's cool.
And
so you were a hub of a
I just
of the
met
community,
my heroes.
Basically.
Oh, I was running that shit.
That's
cool.
She was the mayor.
I was a boss. Yeah, definitely.
Oh, that's cool.
That's cool. So that's great.
So the
plan
kind of worked out.
Yeah.
Although, and then when I showed up here, it was a little bit like,
Easier to get in.
Yeah. But people had context for who I was. Then I just came to visit here as much as I could, and same with New York.
Nice.
So, I don't know. It's kind of worked out.
I know. I think it's funny because
it sounds like it's working out really well.
It's working out really well.
I mean, you've got a good angle in, like, the industry's ignoring me, but it sounds like it's going
You're doing
good.
Very well. And also, it's funny how, like, everybody has. I love always asking these questions because it's always everybody has their own different path. Like for me, it was the opposite. I started literally from zero, moving from DC, Maryland to LA just to start doing open mics in LA. I never thought of Well, I did thought, I was like, but my thought was like, I cannot do it in D.C. because people know me here already. I needed to remove my life, my life, what I had as a, working in an office and all this
just
stuff.
Just to immerse yourself.
Yeah, I immersed myself with comedy and just doing that.
Yeah. And that was good because you were at the beginning of it.
Yeah, well, I had no idea what stand-up was or anything like that, so I learned it here. But then it works as well as going
to... Well, I think I took a page out of your book in a sense because the way I started as well, I started in Scotland, but we were in London and we were having trouble breaking through. So a few of us moved to Manchester. And Manchester is that, like you're saying, like a Portland in England. Manchester is that mid-level city. It had a comedy store and a Jongleurs and a lot of satellite gigs. And there was a lot of ways to get on stage all week.
I really
want
to
get the attention of people and stuff. And I recommend. So I still recommend to comics especially younger comics, when they're really young and they're like, where could I go? I always advise Manchester over London. I'm like, go to Manchester and get your legs and do all those satellite gigs and get to know what you're doing.
And also you can get to know the crowd as well. Like,
Interesting. And then go to London where you're competing more for stage time and stuff like that.
Yeah, I've been thinking lately about just spending like maybe 6 months in the UK.
Yeah.
Sort of like the next thing I want to do. This is about travel, right?
Yeah.
Have you been there before?
I have not been since I've been a comedian.
Oh, so you've been there?
Yeah, spent quite a bit of time there before and in college and stuff. And I was a nanny for some British people who lived in Berkeley, where I went to college. Uh-huh. And so then they would this was a very sweet gig, actually. So I was their nanny, so I would travel with them and basically like help on the plane when they went back home. And then be free to do whatever. So they paid me and paid my travel. And then they're like, we don't need you.
Your job was just in the plane?
Yeah.
Like once you landed in London, like do whatever you want?
They had a couple of random date nights that I would babysit for. But yeah, for the most part.
That's amazing.
It was
as long as you get along with the baby.
Oh, yeah. It was very cute.
And what
baby.
Is it? Like,
and
go
they
to
were
sleep.
Really nice parents. It was a great gig. And so then I just sort of trot around and do whatever for 2 weeks and
that's
then fly
awesome.
Back with them. They were very wealthy.
Obvious.
But I haven't been since I've been a stand-up, but over, the lockdown, I did a lot of British stand-up shows on Zoom.
Oh, nice.
And would meet people because it was perfect. It was noon in LA,
Yeah.
And then I'm I just made $50 or whatever. Yeah. And I still have my whole day ahead of me.
Nice.
And so I met a lot of really nice people who were like, anytime you want to come. And I'm pretty good friends with Tiff Stevenson, who's great.
Oh,
so
I love Tiff.
So just a small crew of people encouraging me to come. But, I also watch a lot of British television. And a lot more people with my face on these shows. You know what I mean? Like, I could be a leading lady there.
I was, you know what? I was meaning, when I intro'd you, I was going to say, I went with very funny, but I was going to say, her self-deprecating humor is relentless, because that is what you do a bit. I watch some of your stand-up, and you just bombard them with this self-deprecation, just like that, which
wouldn't classify it as self-deprecation.
You
because
wouldn't.
I always end up the hero at the end.
Okay.
Oh. And because I do love myself. It's more of a trick. It's more of
to get them to
to make them think I'm going to shit on myself, like many comics do, and unfortunately, many women comics do, and then I'm like,
I like that.
Not really. I actually
doing
really
that
like
that's
myself,
great.
And you're
doing
an
I like that.
Yeah.
That's
so it's
also
not
cool.
Exactly self-deprecating.
Yeah, I think it's more joking with yourself, but also like you said, it's like, but I like myself.
Yeah,
so
I always end up winning in the end.
Well, I don't. I
but
feel
it
that,
is.
But I feel it's self-deprecating in the sense that you can still like yourself, but there's no. To me, hero comedy is very much and then you'll never believe what I did to her. Or
right.
Get my revenge
boring.
That way, and that's to me
arrogant.
Is hero comedy.
Yeah,
but
I like to be a secret
self-deprecation is
alpha.
When you say something like, "A lot of men want a trophy wife, but I'm more like." Stanley Cup at most kind of thing when you're doing things like that.
Yes, more impressive to Canadian men. Yeah. Well, I'm still complimenting myself, but it's like, that's like my favorite way to write jokes.
I like that too.
It's personal misdirection.
And it works amazing in Britain.
I think they would like it,
I've explained
I could get cast there.
I've explained that to Francisco
detective
before.
Or something.
Sometimes
American audiences can get concerned when you go on a self-deprecating trip, but in Britain, they love it. If you are like, I'm a piece of shit, just like you guys. A lot of times, Britain, they'll be like, "Yes, all right."
And in a lot of places in the States, it'll be as I'm doing that sort of setup where they don't know yet that I'm gonna win in the end. There's like a lot of aww.
Yes,
like,
I get that same.
Totally.
Thing.
That's happened to me as well.
Whenever I type stuff like that, I try to like make fun of myself or talk about a thing. I'm like, my dad passed away or something. It's like, wait, relax. It's
I
know he did.
I
know he's dead. You know, like,
yeah.
You don't have to, you know, but like,
yeah.
Or even like poverty comedy, like telling jokes about growing up poor. People go, "Oh, I'm like, fuck you."
Yeah, and also
most people are poor.
Of course, and it's like wait, like you said, wait until I get to the thing because it, when they go, it messes up that you know the momentum, and then now you're like, so now I can't. Now I feel bad if I joke about this because you already don't like even the setup.
But you always have to stop and go, it's a mislead, guys.
Yeah.
It's a mislead.
Yeah.
Like we're going to get, but it's already gone. But
just my favorite. Yeah, it's like my favorite kind of
You
comedy.
Can tell it when it misses, too. When you have one of those setups, that's just a little bit of a sarcastic mislead. And
it's also how I live.
And the audience all believes it. You're like, oh, shit. This
sometimes
is
you get those people the most because then they're so surprised because they're so dumb. They fell for it. And they're like, oh, there's a joke here.
Yeah.
You know, and it's partially how I live my life, too. Like, I love to be underestimated or I love to, like, get on a stage where I can tell everyone thinks I'm
not gonna do good, and then boom.
That's my favorite shit.
That's
awesome. Like, and that's it's so much of my life.
That's great. That's the pitch of your show right there.
It's the Dolly Parton technique. It's like, she's always like, men are so dumb. You know, I could just walk in a room and charm them, and then walk out with their money. It's because they're just like, you know, superficially like, she must not be very bright. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like how she got a lot in her early days. And so I've always sort of taken that approach. I'm sort of the opposite. I'm not like, I'm not implying that I look like Dolly Parton, but it's like, just people assuming I'm not going to be funny or that they won't be charmed by me in some way.
It's very relatable to, you know, I guess for me as well, because, you know, a lot of people always underestimate me, you know, just where I come from or how I sound and stuff like that. And sometimes it's, or even like, and you have to like prove them. You're like, nah, I can't.
You ever play it up? Just like pretend like you speak no English?
I mean, I've done it in some situations. I used to do it when I first started doing comedy, like thicken up the accent and doing all that stuff. You know, but like, but it's always
like,
too.
I don't understand. Yeah. And then you get the job.
Yeah. But also, in talking about comedy, it reminded me. Yeah, it's like it's a way of also like presenting this stuff where people go like, "Oh yeah, Latinas," and then they go like, "Oh well, I didn't know that. Also, they do that. That I do as well." You know. So it's kind of like that whole like misdirection at the end where they're like, "I feel like sometimes I use it to connect with them." Where like, look, I'm. You think I'm different, but we're pretty much the same, and I'll show you how.
Yeah.
And
they or you think you know what I'm going to talk about.
Yes.
And I'm not.
And kind of like breaking that stereotype mold of like, you're not what I think, you know, when I saw you was going to, you're going to talk about all this stuff. And
right.
I'm like, you're talking about different stuff, you know? And I think it's kind of like what you kind of prove your people. They think they see you and she's going to talk about this. And then you come across and give them a curveball. So that's awesome. And so you mentioned London and you, so that'd be your first, that you're like your best or like your favorite destination to go to, I guess, international?
I mean, it's sort of like just my next plan for comedy. Mm-hmm. But I do, I mean, after these last couple years, definitely just miss travel.
Yeah.
So much.
Well, I'm told it's very easy to get into England right now.
Right.
But they're not, they don't do the PCR test.
Oh, yeah. No, it's over.
Have to do it for America.
Well, I'm saying in England. No,
the
prime minister said no more.
You waved that off like, yeah, it's over.
No, he's, you know, there's no restrictions. I read the other day. There's no more restrictions. So, you know, I think it's pretty much
going to be done. Well, they need some.
Yeah.
They're going to need some.
Yeah.
But starting,
I'm going to a funeral next week. I'm pretty sure I'll catch COVID.
Oh.
Oh, really?
Incredible. You didn't have it yet?
Imagine. Yeah. I have not had COVID yet. I know.
In the last 2 months, you didn't get it? God.
What a loser.
I know. It's so weird.
I have not.
Maybe you did and you didn't know it. I mean, every single person I know got it. But, you know, we don't want to talk about
that
COVID.
Strong.
But
no, I haven't.
So before I started stand-up, I mean, basically, you know, from the time I turned 17 until 30, travel was a huge priority for me. So I was always like, I wanted to go out of the country as much as possible and see the world. It slowed down with comedy because I just, that became what I traveled for. And so I still haven't done comedy internationally at all. I haven't even been to Canada, which is crazy.
All right. They're going to love
your
Stanley Cup jokes.
I know, right? And so that's sort of the next thing that I really want to do is combine the two.
Yeah.
And like get back to that. But yeah.
And when you travel, do you have any, you know, kind of like superstitions or anything, or like, you know, things that you do that you, you know, that, oh, I got to do this. You know, when I travel, I have to touch the plane or have to or bring something with me.
I'm not very superstitious. I bring, oh, I was going to say this for my final, for the final
That's
question.
That's fine. You're going to.
We'll ask the second one.
Oh, yeah. Well, now that I, because the last, you know, especially 5-6 years, I've traveled more than I've been at home. I mean, not during the lockdown.
Yeah.
I'm not one of those comics. and so now I bring like these, well, I call them comforts of home. If I'm driving, I take a lot more of them because, you know, early on I was like road dog, drive super long distances. And so I would take just things that made everything more comfortable, like my own blankets, my own sheets. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Right.
If I'm flying, and even just like, I don't know, pictures of my family.
Okay.
Wow.
Just things that kind of just can make
you literally
move
in.
I guess that's my fault because I was picturing them in a big frame or something. You just got like picture frames in there.
Just
something simple.
I was like, okay, where are you going, Amy? It's like, oh, I'm doing a weekend. It's like, why do you have a U-Haul? I bring all my stuff.
I'm going to take my pictures
of
my family.
My grandfather made this rocking chair. No, that's more if I'm driving. But now I'm flying, just small things. And they're not superstitions, but just like, I don't know. They just kind of ground me. Just little keepsakes and, you know, just a rock I got at the beach
with my
ex-boyfriend, whatever. Yeah. We're still friends. And lately.
These are a lot of things.
Always.
This is a collection. Always
a scented candle. Because I always have candles burning in my home.
Okay.
Always. Usually several. It's going to burn down at some point.
So your home is a fire hazard.
Pretty much,
and
yeah.
And so are your hotel rooms.
I mean, there's always just decorative lighting and candles, and
nice.
It's very cozy, like I'm very good at making a home. And so I try to do that on the road. But last week when I went through TSA, I had the craziest argument with them. Because they pulled out my scented candle, which was expensive, by the way. And it's very hard to find a scented candle that has like that's in metal and not glass.
Okay.
So I managed to find this maybe aluminum container with candle. And they were telling me it was liquid. And I was like, well, this is a solid right now.
Yeah.
I mean, if we put fire on it. It would technically be liquid, but I'm not going to do that on the plane.
Yeah.
And they tried to take it, and I was like, you know, I'm always, as a white lady, I don't really fight, you know.
I'll
just try to be funny. Yeah, I don't want to be like a TSA Karen or whatever.
Yeah.
So I was just like making jokes, and then she ultimately let me keep. I'm like, well, I don't put it in my checked luggage underneath the plane. Because if it gets hot down there, it might become a liquid. But think how nice the plane would smell, you know? And then she was like, okay, you can keep it. So now I don't even know if I can keep traveling with these candles. That was the first time they ever tried to take it.
God.
Yeah.
And I was just like, yeah, if you have to, go ahead.
Yeah,
it depends who you get, doesn't it?
It's like the TSA is literally like the DMV.
Yeah.
It's like,
you might go.
You're going to hate this process.
Yeah. Or no one's like, oh, this is fast. Kind. I got my license in 50 minutes.
Totally. Yeah. But so. I got a lady and she was really sweet and I made her laugh. So she let me keep the candle. So now I'm like, oh, is this going to be a problem moving forward? But in general, I always suggest to people like, yeah, just if you travel a ton, it helps your sanity to just have something that reminds you of home at all, right. You know. And I try to unpack, even if it's more than one night, I'll put my clothes in the drawers, hang a couple of things up.
Wow.
I got to make sure I don't forget them. That always scares me. Yeah. I leave, my favorite sneakers
in the
closet.
That's one of the hardest things in hotels.
Yeah. Well, I always check. My trick, so you don't forget anything, just pretend you committed a murder or something. And you just got to clean everything. You don't want to leave anything. And that's it. Just check everything.
Yeah.
Check on the day.
And you are murdering people.
Yeah,
so.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, that's why I travel for.
And then I go, do you all know Daiso, the Japanese dollar store?
No.
You
haven't been to a Daiso yet? You haven't lived, Francisco.
Oh, yeah. You got to go. There's one.
There's one by me.
In the Hollywood one by the Rock and Roll Ralphs.
East Hollywood.
I'm in East Hollywood
by Highland.
Okay, yeah.
There's the Ralph's at Highland. It's upstairs from that one.
Yes. And then there's one in the Little Tokyo Mall.
So is that Japanese dollar store?
Yeah, it's basically, like a 99-cent store, but they have cute, good stuff.
Okay.
And I get a lot of travel stuff there because I just find, I don't know, this is like, I like cute shit. And and just to see it, it just makes traveling more pleasant. And they just sell all these little, travel gadgets, you know?
Yeah,
like, I have a little.
I think I even got a weighing scale for a
suitcase. Oh, yeah, for your luggage,
yeah.
I have, just this little cover for my toothbrush, you know, which is practical. It's preventing germs.
Yeah.
And it has a suction so you can stick it on the hotel mirror. But he has a really happy face on the front.
Okay.
And so I call him Toothbrush Man. It's a whole thing. I left one Toothbrush Man in a hotel a few months ago and I was very sad.
Wow. Imagine how he feels.
I know, just smiling alone.
He smiles
But, you know, it's two for a dollar, so I got the other Toothbrush Man and we're all fine. But they have a lot, you know, just little things to put your pills in or whatever, vitamins, and it just makes me smile.
Good plug for Daiso.
Funny is that we're sponsored by them, so I don't know why.
I go before I go home for Christmas as well, because it's good for stocking stuffers for my niece and nephews.
Yes.
Because you can get fuzzy socks and you can get bunny woolly hats. And
yes. Oh, yes.
Mittens
and
stuff like that. So it's very good for.
I take slippers everywhere. I mean, this is
there you go.
This is a sign that I grew up poor. It's I'm never barefoot. I hate having dirty feet.
Yeah.
So I always
not even in a carpet.
No. Maybe even less so in a carpet, if we're being honest.
Okay.
Because there could be anything in
there.
That's
true.
A hardwood floor in a hotel, you can. You know,
yeah.
You can bleach it or whatever. Carpet is just,
it's
you're
dirty,
just walking on cum, Francis.
Yeah.
I am never.
Who's coming in the. Wait, I'm so.
Listen, sometimes
things
go off
Toothbrush
the rails,
man.
Toothbrush man is.
You can't always aim.
Yeah, what do you think Toothbrush man
is? Yeah, but
has
I mean, usually it's a big bed.
Face.
I mean, what do you. I mean, somebody just going.
I don't know. What if you're on the edge of the bed?
That's true.
You
got to
try some more exciting sex. I don't know what. We'll talk about it
later. I got to tell my fans that.
I'll demonstrate.
Corner sex. Corner pocket sex.
I'm not even barefoot in my own home. Never.
You what?
In my house, I don't even. I'm not barefoot. Ever.
Oh really?
No. Oh never. I mean, in the shower, obviously.
Okay. Yeah.
That's it. Literally.
And then your slippers.
If I get up in the middle of the night to pee,
put
slippers
the
on, walk to the bathroom, walk back.
Well, I always have this thing of which
I'm
is
crazy.
I mean, I feel like that. I mean, I grew up too with don't be barefoot because you get sick.
Yeah.
That was my thing. But I don't know if that's even real. I mean,
step on a nail or something.
Yeah,
or
no, I mean.
Step in cat shit.
Yeah, that's true.
My house. Not my current house. My childhood house.
But I do.
You don't even have cats. I don't even have cats, but for some reason.
So, I wanted to, because we're almost done, but I wanted to quickly ask about your family. I mean, so you do you have any siblings? And if you can share a quick story, a fun story about with your family traveling or something like that, something that's really oh my God, this.
Oh,
happened.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's funny, our travel. Yes. I am the youngest of four.
Okay.
And mostly was a single mom. I had a single mom. My dad died when I was 9. It's okay. It turned out he wasn't my real dad. It's a whole thing.
Wait, what? Right? Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Not that made it easier, but.
So I'm.
No, exactly.
I'm going to be the showrunner to your show.
Yeah.
Because I'm just taking the notes of your show.
Yes.
Of your BBC show. I like. I liked it.
Yes. I know. I'll be the new Roseanne, but in the UK.
They
would love that.
Of course.
White trash America. most of our traveling would like just be to family's house. I mean, we didn't have money like to Disneyland or certainly to go out of the country. I think the furthest, I mean, we never really left the state. Maybe the furthest is like Nevada, but which is crazy. Yeah, we didn't even go to Mexico, and like I'm from California. So it's like our travel would be always in the car. I never flew till I was 17 and I went out of the country like on my own for the first time. And I mean, I don't. My family's insane.
whose family?
They're all very chubby, you know. And so it's just a lot of memories of like. And it was the 80s, and so it's just a lot of memories of like riding in the back of an open truck on the highway for hours. That was like some of the most fun memories of my life.
Wow!
Like they would pack around us in the bed of the truck. It's so dangerous.
Yeah.
And we would just have this little hole in the middle, and then a
and
tarp
this is you
over
and
the
three
top
of your siblings.
Or sometimes my cousins. Yeah, and my sisters. Oh. And it's so loud. I mean, you're on the highway.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We're just screaming at each other and listening to music and playing games and like, you know, occasionally popping our head out, and then they'd be like, get down.
Yeah,
because they didn't want to get arrested because they were also drinking and driving the whole time.
Man, this is amazing.
Always.
This is a hell of a holiday.
I love it.
I mean, my dad would have like a big gulp cup just filled with beer.
That's great.
And sometimes we would have like my uncle's motorhome, and that, you know, I have a lot of memories of like just eating just Fruity Pebbles by the gallon.
Yeah.
Right. And just like, whoa. Like, why is it so bumpy? Well, dad's drunk is why it's so bumpy.
I'm afraid to ask how your dad passed away now.
Well, he had a heart attack. But he did try to drive himself to the hospital, which is very characteristic of him.
Oh, that's a very dad. Like,
I got it. We don't need to call 911.
Yeah. Wow.
So he did like crash on the way, but probably, yeah.
Fill up my big gulp. I'm going to drive. I'm going to drive this off.
And it was like his third heart attack. Like, it was
holy cow.
He never
trooper.
Changed any of his behavior, you know.
Yeah.
He had like a quadruple bypass by like 40.
Oh, wow.
And his doctor was like, you have to stop smoking, drinking, and eating bacon. And he was like, I think I'm good.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so he died at 44. Wow. Which at the time I thought was like when
old.
People die.
Yes.
Yeah.
I remember growing up when I was grown, I was like 40. I remember when my dad was turned 40. I was like, oh, he's like, to me, that was like 70.
Yeah, like a grandfather.
I was like grandfather style. And I'm like, oh, shit. Like, that's little middle age.
Yeah, now I know that it's a huge tragedy.
Yes.
To die at 44 when you have children.
Taking you this much time, you go, oh, yeah, that was too soon. Like,
yeah, my dad died when he was old. Oh, no, he was just right in the prime of his life.
Yeah.
That is true. Actually, it's funny because I remember, too, also being in Venezuela, my grandma putting us in the back of her, you know, SUV with the dog, and same thing, just driving. That was fun, you know.
Yeah.
Dangerous as hell. My grandma was just like driving with my grandpa. She was like 70 and just going like 80 miles an hour, yelling at people, you know. She had a parrot and the cat and the dog and going like, shut up. And I was like, oh, like, you know.
Yeah.
So, and
that
was normal.
Babies, my mom would just like lay us down in the front seat and drive around. And you know, I have a very, very early memory of being a toddler and like just sitting in the front seat, no seatbelt.
No.
I mean, it's just so wild. And then she had to like stop short, and then I was like, whoa, I'm like in the floorboard. Like, I have a visual memory of just being like,
oh, wow.
Cut me up.
That's great. Wow, that was amazing. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, well done with all your success then.
Oh, I know. Against all odds, right? That's what I tell myself.
Wow. Like,
yeah, well, especially initial Silicon Valley type job. That was the job, right? It was a Silicon Valley type job?
Yeah, kind of. Tech.
And are your
tech job, that's right.
Yeah.
And just quick, is your family, like, they love that you do comedy? Is that a cool thing?
They do, yeah. They've been very supportive. They enjoy it. They don't always like being talked about.
Of course.
My mom kind of likes it because she's like, well, you know, as long as you're thinking about me. But it's like, yeah, I mean, I went on television saying some of these things.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, I don't know. I mean, statute of limitations,
yeah.
you know. They've always been super supportive. That's they're cool. all hilarious too. Nah, so yeah. they're like,
I just hearing your stories, I can see how it's hilarious. I love it. Well, that was awesome. We're almost basically running out of time. I want to thank you.
Thank you
for coming. This was fun. We'd love to definitely have you back because we didn't finish half of the questions.
Did
that
we not ask all our questions? We asked
like three or four.
We got childhood travel. We got. Yeah. Travel.
Comedy. We crushed
back
it.
Back of a truck.
Yeah, that's true.
Dad, big gulp.
Yeah.
Crushed it.
But it was great.
We always have one final question we like to ask.
Well, but before that, I want people to, or you can let people know where they can find you, where they can follow you, and also, again, the date of your half-hour special.
Oh, yeah, just, follow me on Instagram at Amy Miller Comedy, and then... I always post my shows there. I have a lot of out-of-town dates coming. I'm going to be in Seattle soon. Come see me there. I don't know when this comes out, but I'm headlining Oxnard next week.
Oh, yeah. No, it's not going to happen.
Oh, okay.
It'll be out in time for your special, though. It'll be out right before your special. So, everybody.
Oh, yeah. March 24th.
This is your window. So, check out your special.
Please check it out. Comedy Central. Well, thank you, Amy.
Thank you.
And now the last question.
Which we possibly already burned, though, because you may have given it
but
as
she
an
can,
answer.
But I have
but here is the question. We always have to ask it, like, it's for the supercut reason as
well.
Yeah. So, Amy, we like to ask one final question of our guests, and that is, do you have a favorite piece of travel advice you'd like to give to people?
Bring slippers. Cum in the carpet.
There we go. Bring slippers.
Bring slippers because there's cum in the carpet.
The fastest and most accurate and piece of advice.
I know. It was like, there's nothing.
And you can get those at Daiso as well. One, two, maybe $3.
Why, the cum or the slippers?
In the back.
she's
the Hollywood location.
She's extremely correct about this as well because, you know, sometimes they wrap the remote control in the plastic because of the cum issue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So,
apparently there's a lot of cum in rooms that I never thought of.
As well.
You're not having enough fun in hotel
Well, you know
rooms.
What? I don't think about it because if you think about it, then I'm not going to sleep. You know, it's kind of like going to a restaurant and you start thinking of all the dirty stuff that you're doing in the kitchen.
Which is too bad because thinking about it is what will help you get to sleep.
I actually don't care that much about having the cum on my feet. If that's, I mean, it's putting the feet back in my bed where I'm sleeping.
Oh.
Which is also crazy because it's not like I've never had a stranger's cum on me. AmyMillerComedy.com.
That is Amy Miller.
And this is where we're going to put the more you know. This is it. Yes.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Remember to subscribe. Follow us on our YouTube channel. Follow us on Spotify, iTunes. And please, if you have any questions, send us a DM. Right?
Yeah. Hit us up.
Bye, Alu.
Thanks, Amy.